Welcome back to Almost Famous Minute, where we're discussing the 2000 Cameron Crowe film Almost Famous, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash from Watchmen Minute.
Hey, it's me, Tyler Boudreau from Wildcat Minute. And we have our special guest today.
Chad Burdett from the Albany Times Union Comics blog and other things.
Yeah, welcome back, both you guys. Tyler, thanks so much for doing a little co-hosting duties again. I appreciate that, buddy.
Oh, thank you. It's my job.
And Chad's our guest, as we said. He's an old friend I met way over in Reading, Pennsylvania many years ago now.
Yep. Old friends.
And we even did the little Baltimore Comic Con trip too.
The good old days.
Yeah, in the good old days when you could actually meet up with people and
leave the house.
Yeah. Be in a crowd.
So we're back this week, second week with these couple wonderful guys, for minute 53, and it starts with Jeff explaining the roles in the band and ends with Jeff continuing the argument.
A lot of Jeff.
Yeah. And I was so glad that, you know, like this probably best longest, you know, kind of, diatribe by him, wasn't. Well, it just barely cut off at the end, but it's just the majority of it, what it's really about, his role in the band is captured, just within this minute. Sometimes there's punchlines. There's no punchline here, I don't think, but there's punchlines of jokes in other movies that are much more humorous, meant to be humorous and so forth, where jokes are just they have a punchline that's cut off right perfectly, unfortunately, sometimes, or imperfectly, as it may be.
Yeah, so I guess this minute is our opportunity to kind of talk about the dynamic between Russell and Jeff, where one is like Jeff is supposed to be the front man. How does he put it?
I'm the front man, and you're the guitarist with Mystique, and we're not talking about the comic book character, right? we can talk about Page and Plant and Mick and Keith, you know. So of course he's talking about Zeppelin first, and Jimmy Page the guitarist, and Robert Plant vocalist, and then he switches the roles here for Mick and Keith. Mick is the vocalist and Mick Jagger, if you didn't know who that was, Keith Richards. And so in both cases, you know, both of those guitarists are supposed to be, you know, have this mystique about them, and definitely, and more so compared, at least when they're compared with the vocalists, and I get that pretty well. I mean, I have it in my head a little less so with Mick and Keith. I mean, I think Mick has a bit of mystique to him too, but, Keith definitely has this vibe as well, though, which I've recently joked a bit about, so I'm not going to go through that joke again. But
well, moving kind of further into the future, you know, talking about, you know, guitarists and lead singers, you know, Van Halen comes to mind.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only band I can really think of where it's like the guitarist is the main star and like everyone else really doesn't matter. All of these other bands, it's like, yeah, like I get there's like a leader, there's like a lead man and
they're
a guitarist.
Very important, right.
But they kind of have equal value, like, like even like Steven Tyler and Joe Perry, like they're equals in my mind.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing, you know. I mean, yeah, Jeff says front man, you know. Well, I mean, it's the lead singer, and there was even the one point when Russell gets shocked because he's going to grab the mic, so he was going to start singing some backing vocals, it seemed like, I believe. The song that they were singing at that point in the recorded version that we have on, through other sources besides the soundtrack, I think it's through the Uncool website that Cameron Crowe runs. he released some of these other things that weren't officially released back in the day, more recently in the past 5 or 10 years. But Hour of Need is the song there that just didn't make sense to me that Russell would be going to grab and sing some backing vocals, except a live version could always be arranged a bit differently. But so then, besides those four names he gives for two pairs that are in two bands, there's one more pair that is given in the director's cut, untitled, and that is Blackmore Gillen, is what Jeff Beebe says.
And what band are they in?
And so that's Deep Purple. And so the thing there is, I mean, you know, we actually get a Deep Purple song in a couple more minutes or so. You know, and that's actually a song that had yet to be, I think, even maybe written, at least recorded and released at this time in 73. But we'll go more into that then. But yeah, Ritchie Blackmore, as guitarist of Deep Purple, I mean, they are notorious. They're a band that's notorious for having all these different versions. And Deep Purple, I could even see being another band that's kind of could have been thrown out there as being an inspiration for this for the band Stillwater, because they kind of did go from some more pop elements, not heavy pop, but just a little bit poppy, kind of blues pop, if anything, to this much more heavy metal, hard rock heavy metal, more into the 70s they went.
Yeah, it's just usually the argument is the other way around, where like another band member thinks that the lead singer is taking up too much space. So I guess it's an interesting reversal here. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Do you really think that Jeff is the hardest working one up on stage there?
Well, you know, and there is a scene to come where he's even actually, besides just singing lead, he is actually even playing an instrument, playing a piano. And we've also seen him. He also does know how to play guitar too, but I don't think we've seen that on stage. We only see that in the hotel room. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, a lead singer is considered, you know, because they're not playing instruments generally. If they're not playing guitar, I mean, that would be the most common thing for a lead singer to play in a good, you know, hard rock band, say.
I was going to say, talking about lead singers, you know, playing instruments again. Going, you know, into the 80s, you have Genesis, where Phil Collins was the drummer.
Right. Yeah, which is somewhat unusual for drummers to also be, especially the lead singer. I mean, you know, every now and then I'd see some drummers being, you know, doing some good backing vocals, much like Dave Grohl did with Nirvana. He would do backing vocals for Kurt. But then when he moved to be the front man, to be a guitar player as well as lead singer for Foo Fighters, his newer drummer for that band, Taylor Hawkins, he also puts in some time as a backing vocalist, and even there's definitely been a point or two where he does some lead vocals himself. But yeah, you know, it's him being the hardest working. I mean, he definitely gives this. So that's that brings us to the thing I was getting to a little bit. You know, so he says, "Look, I work as hard or harder than anybody on that stage. You know what I do? I connect. I get people off. I look for the one guy who isn't getting off, and I make him get off." And of course, you know, previous to that, you know, Jeff and Russell said back and forth that, talking about William being there and Jeff not wanting to say anything else, not increasingly give too much insight to the band dynamics and so forth and past history maybe. But you know, rather than Russell defending him, you know, that William wouldn't write whatever Jeff might have to say next. But Jeffson gives that little bit and he says, actually, that you can print.
Hey, speaking of getting people off, should we cut to an ad?
Oh, yeah, right.
I was going to say that, but...
Yeah, we have some great ways to get people off. Usually with a partner, but sometimes on your own with some sexy free videos, movies. We're talking about Adam and Eve, and you can get some free stuff to spice up your bedroom at adamandeve.com. If you you can input a promo code, it's AFMPOD, there when you go to checkout. You get to select almost any one item for 50% off. And what then you get even more stuff that Adam and Eve will give you, just more free stuff at that point. You'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, and you also get a sexy item for him, or you can get a sexy item for him, a special gift for her, but then a third item you'll both enjoy. On top of all that, you also get 6 free spicy movies. And we know you like movies because you're listening to this podcast about the movie Almost Famous. And of course, you always get free shipping, or at least this first time, I should say. But you just need to go to adamandeve.com and insert AFMPOD. That's AFMPOD at checkout at adamandeve.com. It's all happening.
It's all happening.
There's also the point where Penny and I think a couple others maybe are leaving the room. She has been ironing here.
I mean, I want to get back to this idea that the lead singer is the hardest working person on stage.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we've been talking about this kind of dynamic between the guitarist and the singer. Like, I mean, so yeah, are there specific examples you guys have of like singers who do a really good job of engaging people or seem like they're working harder than others, or do you think he's just kind of exaggerating himself?
It all looks hard to me because I can't sing and I can't play an instrument. So anybody up on that stage impresses me.
I mean, for me, I mean, I'll just say like, singing is obviously hard, but it's also hard to sing if you're running around stage and if you have high energy and you're walking and you're like trying to breathe and sing, that can be really hard. So that's definitely props to him there. I don't remember Jeff's kind of dancing moves, if he has a kind of a Mick Jagger kind of dance to him, or if he's just kind of a more traditional, just kind of standing person. I don't know how he moves.
Yeah, I would say more limited.
From what I remember, it's more the sway.
Yeah.
But in my experience of concert going, like, I don't know, like, I've seen a few concerts in my day. I also work at a concert venue, so there's that. Mm. First off the top of my mind is, like, the Killers, right? So Brandon Flowers is the front man, and he'll pick up a guitar or go to the piano every once in a while, but mostly he's just singing. Uh-huh. And so he kind of just hops between like the sides of the stage, and he's doing this hard work of singing, but I don't know if he's like, that seems kind of normal. Like he's just kind of there. He's not working any harder or less hard. Another example I have is my favorite band is Bare Naked Ladies. And back when they had Stephen Page, he was kind of like their lead singer, and he would pick up a guitar every once in a while, but him and Ed kind of split the singing between them. Almost not quite 50-50, but they each had songs that they sang. So when Ed was singing a song, Steve wasn't really doing as much. So it seemed like Steve was doing less work.
Yeah. Wow.
I think the last concert that I went to was probably, a Dave Matthews concert. And, you know, I like Dave Matthews Band up to a certain point, not the newer stuff, but, I mean, Dave seems like he was, when I saw him, he was playing, he's singing, but he would also kind of step back and give the other band members a chance to have the spotlight.
Yeah.
But it was mostly him, you know, interacting with the crowd.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're the kind of the featured artist, and you're playing guitar and singing, if you're a Gary Clark Jr. type, or trying to think of someone from the 70s that would be more appropriate. totally blanking.
Well, kind of like we have the bus scene, the infamous the very famous bus scene coming up. I would say Elton John. You know, I mean, he is the performer.
Yeah, he's a solo act.
yet, I mean, he has his studio musicians, and then I'm pretty sure. I don't know if he took those same musicians would go out with him or not, but then he would have the other musicians that would definitely go out, at least, on stage with him. And but I mean, they would take a back seat. I don't think of any of the other musicians really usually.
Yeah, I think I also recently, years ago, saw Roger Walters, but it was. That show itself is a whole production, so you kind of see him, you kind of don't. You see everything else that's going on around you on the stage as they're, building the wall. But, the band members are also kind of there, but they're kind of in the background. I didn't even know till the end when he was, giving credits to the band, his backup band, that G.E. Smith from the Saturday Night Live band was playing with them at that night.
Hmm.
Or isn't I've seen Roger Waters. I saw him do the wall twice. Isn't his son like the guitarist or something? Is that a total figment of my imagination? Because I know what's the Comfortably Numb is the big guitar solo in the second half, right?
Probably. I don't know. Like I said, it's been a while since we went to see him,
and that guitar solo goes to this person who I'm imagining is Roger Waters' son. And Roger Waters obviously is doing most of the singing and is usually playing, but I remember that being a big moment in the Wall show where it was someone else getting the spotlight. Huh. Pink Floyd is another interesting one where there is the argument between Gilmore and Waters about who's kind of the front man, and that kind of tears them apart.
Well, my wife is a Pink Floyd fan, but she will not listen to the Gilmore stuff. I mean, I like both of them. I mean, I have purchased, both The Wall and The Division Bell, so.
Yeah, besides The Wall, I'm not clear generally on who's doing what song on any of the other albums, I just know The Wall is Roger's, his big concept.
It is interesting, though, now that I mention it, that that's kind of a debate between a guitarist and a bass player. And then that's kind of a more interesting debate, because I'm even thinking of the Beatles. I mean, John Lennon wasn't the lead guitarist, but John versus Paul is kind of a more classic. Like, they were kind of sharing the front man status. And same with David Gilmour and Roger Waters. And that's kind of a more interesting debate than just kind of lead singer who doesn't play an instrument and guitarist who does less singing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't really thought about how similar that those two bands are, in that respect. But and so many others have more clearly defined, someone is. But that's something you were saying last minute, or no, at the very beginning of this minute with, Page Plant, McKeith, that they were. It's not so much that one of them is a front man. It's just more that, Plant is the lead singer, and he'll go up and. Be the host in a sense, maybe at a concert, and Jimmy Page would hang back and play some really mean guitar.
I mean, speaking of Jimmy Page, I mean, even when he was releasing Coverdale Page, I mean, he still took the kind of the background role.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
I like the idea that Jeff brings up towards the beginning, is that they decided what their roles were. And he says, we have a responsibility to kind of maintain them. Like, I like it when a band has kind of like established character roles for each of the band members. And I think that it really does help an audience kind of understand who the band is.
You're the bad boy.
Yeah. I mean, the Beatles is kind of the classic example, because like Paul's the cute one and John's the kind of cruel one, and George is the talent and Ringo's kind of the silly one. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the classic film That Thing You Do, but I always thought that was a classic arrangement of characters of that a band could be. Weezer, obviously Rivers is kind of the front band that takes most of the credit, but they all kind of have their own personalities that is, they like their own way of dressing and their own way of acting that is kind of unique.
And then they started building bands that way, you know, when they started building the boy bands.
Or yeah, you got the Spice Girls.
Yeah, that's what you had to. That's how you built a band, was each one was given a specific role to play or a certain audience to appeal to.
Yeah, that's heavily contrived. Those boy bands, and then I mean, you know, and that all kind of, I feel like that kind of came out of the Beatles and like with the Monkees then that tried to do something similar, but you know where. Yeah, they definitely had some defined roles, but you know, it's all unfortunately that kind of stuff to me has a bad taste. Even though I love the Monkees as a kid, I love the show especially, and I certainly grew to appreciate a good bit of their music. Not every little deep cut, but a lot of their hits. But
well, that's probably one of my favorite episodes of The Simpsons, where they form the boy band and they're like, you're the bad boy. You're the one that, you know, you'll take home to mom.
And I think it's fun when a band kind of creates their own, not stereotypes, but roles for the band members to take, because it's not like, oh, you always have the kind of sexy front man. I would say that's probably where Stillwater went wrong, is they were basing them. I actually think this might be clever. They're trying to base themselves off of pre-existing bands instead of being themselves. So if you decide beforehand, okay, the lead singer is going to be the sexy one and the guitarist is going to have mystique and the drummer is just kind of be the guy with mutton chops that no one really likes. And the bass player will kind of also be there, then you're not being creative. You're not doing anything with it. Uh-huh. And that's kind of what Stillwater is probably lacking.
Hmm. Kind of shoehorning people into a role that, you know, they may not be good at doing or could be doing something better with.
And that's why I've kind of always loved Bare Naked Ladies, not to get back on them, but they've always just kind of taken joy in that their roles are so silly, and the drummer will sing during the encores and then the lead singer will play drums, and they like to throw that into the mix.
There's a band, I think it's out of Pittsburgh, that I used to listen to. I haven't heard about them, but their name is Moxie Fruvis, and one of their songs, like every minute or so, they would all switch instruments and keep playing.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. One of the times I saw Jack White, the band that opened for him was Shovel and Rope, and I think it might have been a brother and sister, or maybe just a guy and a girl. And they would kind of, every song they would switch, like one was played drums, one would play guitar, and they would just kind of switch between them. And I thought that was an interesting way to do it. Just like, yeah, who cares? Just switch it up every once in a while.
But yeah, so and they're back to the point you're kind of getting at a little bit, I think, you know, where Jeff says there's a responsibility here, and that's when Russell Hammond kind of interrupts him, saying, excuse me, but didn't we all get into this to avoid responsibility? And, you know, I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of again a classic kind of stereotype of rock bands, especially of the 70s, say, that, you know, coming out of the 60s, that you know, they love the idea of being in a rock band from the greatness that they saw of whether it was Beatles, Stones, Who, or Zeppelin or something. But, you know, they just kind of saw it as a way to be free from responsibility.
I think that's kind of a cop-out answer from Russell, though. He knows he's losing the argument. Mm-hmm. So he's like, something vague about how we're cool rock stars and not actually engaging in the points that my opponent is making. But at the same time, Jeff is being a bit of a of a jerk, I'll say.
Yeah, Jeff definitely has these jerky tendencies. I mean, but again, not to say that Russell doesn't have his own with that poolside chat. One other thing we see here at like about minute, second 40 is good old Silent Ed sitting over on this one of these chairs. Looks like a couple different chairs next to Dick. Dick has come over and sat down next to him. And we're not totally sure. I don't feel totally understanding about where some of the different people are in the room. I mean, we definitely have the bigger view when we do see Penny in the background there, but you know, which side of that room from that view behind William, you know, which side has Larry on it, which side has Ed and now Dick on.
Yeah. Kind of so, like we were talking about last minute. It's not the spatial awareness of the photography is not perfect in this. Although I will kind of amend what I do enjoy directing wise is that when we see William watching Jeff kind of rant, it is kind of an interesting POV shot where we do get this like small amount of camera movement as he kind of looks back and forth as Jeff kind of walks across the room. And I do think that's an interesting shot, and it is looking up at him just that small amount, which is good. And then we kind of cut back to it, see William's kind of faces that are bland-ish, but express that he's interested in what's going on.
Yeah, William is kind of, you know, taken aback at the one point, but then he's more into it when Jeff says he can, like, that you can print, you know. He understands that and he gives a little nod. And then the other thing, back to Silent Ed, I mean, the one thing we see there, though, is Ed doing some of his good silent acting, his just very nonverbal body language, you know, eye roll-ish type thing almost. He looks over at Dick is what he's doing, you know, and just kind of, there's a blink in there and, you know, it's like, I can't believe this is happening. This really sucks. Kind of attitude. But hopefully we'll get through this and things will be back to normal soon. So now we'll get to, for you, Tyler, would you be able to rank for us just your favorite and favorite to least or vice versa, the four bands? You need a rundown of them again?
So it's Zeppelin, Eagles, Allman Brothers, and Skynyrd.
Yeah.
All right, Zeppelin, I have to agree with Chad is number one for me.
A large majority of the...
Definitely so the only band in this cropping that I care for at all.
What a bunch of hacks.
Oh, wow.
Led Zeppelin is good. I definitely see their influence in a lot more music. Someone once pointed out to me that Jack White has a lot of traces in Led Zeppelin. And I see that, even though I do definitely think that Jack White's influence is more the Delta blues and that kind of blues tradition that Led Zeppelin was also kind of playing on, but in a different way. I think there are two different branches from the same root, but I don't think Jack White is on the same branch as Led Zeppelin in a weird way. But that's a different discussion. Next, I've really never listened to Allman Brothers at all. I don't even think I could tell you a song, but I think I'm going to rate them next because I think they have cred. I just not sure what kind. And then I'll go Eagles and then Skynyrd. They can just be tied. I don't really connect with the kind of. I don't want to like put them down by calling them country rock because I do think they're legitimate rock and roll bands, but. That kind of rock with the country sound, I never really connected with as strongly as the more bluesy sound. And it's always been my impression that Zeppelin was kind of more on the blues and Allman Brothers. I don't know where they lie. Am I totally making stuff up? Are they more bluesy or country?
Southern rock.
I say Allman Brothers definitely have a more blues vibe than, say, Skynyrd.
Okay.
But there, it's not so much country. I'd say if anything is closest to country on this list, it's Eagles. The yeah. other two, Allman Brothers and Lynyrd Skynyrd, they're just this Southern fried kind of feel, you know, to blues, take on blues.
Yeah, and I mean, in general, I don't really. 70s is kind of where you lose me for music. Yeah. I have a lot of Beatles knowledge and like 60s music love. I love a lot of the Who and Rolling Stones early records from the 60s. And then once they get into the 70s, I kind of trail off with them. Aerosmith is probably the only band whose records from the 70s I've connected with. And I mean, I enjoy some Electric Light Orchestra and certain songs and bands, but this kind of like the kind of genre of music that this movie is about, which is kind of these like long hair kind of sexy kind of twangy rock bands, I've never really connected with as much. So
I would say Skynyrd and Allman Brothers are more of the early, almost like a jam band almost, but more of a
yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely don't connect with jam bands. So that was that's the angle I think that really distills it for me. But yeah, okay. That's kind of my diatribe. I mean, I've mentioned all the bands that I'm interested in, and so you can judge my music taste as far as you're concerned.
Well, I definitely recommend. I mean, if you know, you mentioned the Who, and their very late 60s one I love is crap, why is it? It's the mini opera one that's in Rushmore.
Oh, Quick One?
Quick One While He's Away.
Yeah, that's like one of my favorite songs. Yeah, oh great. My God. Yeah. Same. That whole album is great.
Well, yeah, and I haven't listened to that whole album for quite a while, but just that song itself is.
Yeah, don't Rushmore. That's my favorite movie. So, mm-hmm. Wow. Then that's kind of why I love all those '60s songs. Is that there are all those kind of different Wes Anderson vibe. Mm-hmm. It's not punk music, but it's kind of that kind of rough sound that was in the '60s.
Yeah, a little bit garage rock essentially. They're kind of, some of it's garage rocky, some of it's more kind of on the more pop. Depending on the pop singer songwriter side with like Cat Stevens too, you know. But
At the same time, I do really love Simon and Garfunkel and kind of the Cat Stevens vibe. That also really hits me good. So.
Well, let's get some thoughts from Chad too. I'd specifically like to know about your history with the movie, but you know, also some anything about the kind of like the classic rock, the 70s rock that more you'd like to say.
Well, if I had to pick a decade of rock that I've most I say identify with, it's probably the 80s pop, but there was I would say my high school years, I did kind of take a dive into the Southern rock, Lynyrd Skynyrd stuff. So, I mean, I have a pretty eclectic music taste. Right now, I'm kind of into the alt-rock scene. I mean, I'll listen to that. I'll listen to classic rock. 90s, you know, I'm some of the pop rock from the 90s is, you know, I like the cheesy stuff. Okay, if it was, you know, if they're one hit wonders, then I'm right there. But, you know, I'll listen to the, you know, 70s, 60s. There was even a time probably in the past couple of years that I was really into the 50s.
Oh yeah.
So
cool.
Probably around the time we saw Jersey Boys. I would say I have a pretty eclectic taste in music. I mean, it's funny, since you do the Weezer podcast, my son is 3.5 years old, and we were listening to the 80s station on through the Alexa, and Out of Africa came on, or
Toto Africa came on, he goes, Weezer's like, no, that's Toto, but yeah, and right. Sometimes we'll ask him, what do you want to listen to? Weezer? Yeah, Weezer. So
yeah, that would lead him down a very, you know, unaware of what the whole rest of Weezer's catalog is, you know, take him down some unfortunate like Pinkerton, you know, and the album we're just doing, Maladroit. There's a couple points in Maladroit where it gets a little Pinkerton-ish, which is, you know, to say, kind of not too with it as you know, or judged by time not very well. But then, what about so for the movie though? Like the first time you saw the movie.
Oh, I think I was trying to figure this out. It must have been what I was trying to figure out, but I couldn't find it. What month? Do you know what month it came out in 2000? I'm thinking it was the summer.
I think it's September. September, October, September. Pretty sure.
It must have been either after I graduated from college because I took a year off before I went back to grad school, and every weekend I would go see a movie. And I remember going to see Almost Famous and, you know, really enjoying it. And I bought the DVD and okay. I've seen it. Yeah. It was one of those that was in my, repeatedly. I can watch this and still enjoy it. 'Cause usually if I see a movie once, then it's hard for me to, you know, see it again or even put on a movie here at the house and just kind of sit through and watch it, you know, all the way through and have it keep my interest. But, you know, this is one of my favorite ones because, you know, it hits a lot of strong points for me, you know, music, stuff like that. And I was just thinking, again, when I started doing a lot of interviews at, like, Comic Cons and stuff, when I go up to the, you know, creator, I go, you know, I know I'm the enemy, but would you like to do an interview? And I always, you know, kind of flash back to, you know, this movie as to that whole relationship that, you know, with people who mm-hmm. are more in the spotlight and you're just a regular person that wants to talk to them about yeah. what they're doing.
Sure. Yeah. The couple times when William kind of, you know, indicates presents himself as the enemy. You know, those are some of the sweetest, I think, points when he has that little twinkle in his eye, talking with whoever, whether it's Russell or Penny or whoever.
So that's what I got.
Yeah, thanks so much, Chad, and also Tyler, our co-host for these couple yeah. minutes so far, and hopefully we can have you both back for the next one. Think that's possible.
Sounds good.
Seems good.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so I too am a Movies by Minutes podcaster. My current project is podcasting Wildcat Minute, which is our minute-by-minute analysis of High School Musical with me and my sister, Condra, whom you've heard on this show before. So I guess I don't need to go into too much detail about it, but yeah, our podcast feed is the Amateur Nerds, so if you want to look us up, you can find us there. Just kind of lighthearted kids fair in High School Musical, but it's fun because I haven't seen the movie, so I'm kind of working through it 1 minute at a time, seeing it for the first time. And if you want to check out our older projects, we did Fantastic Mr. Fox 1 minute at a time and the Joss Whedon project, Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, in about 14 episodes, and I believe you can find Eric on one of those episodes.
Not for Dr. Horrible. Now Zach, I think he got on, right?
All right. I'm blanking then.
Yeah.
All right. I've popped up on some other Movies by Minutes and Feels Like Weezer, but probably spend too much time looking through those for it to be worth it. So yeah. And on the social media, you can follow Amateur Nerds on Twitter at Amateur Nerds. You can follow me personally at Tyler Booty, TylerBoudy. Like Boudreaux, and on Instagram at the same handle if you care for videos of me playing ukulele covers, which is most of what I spend my quarantine content production also doing. But yeah, that's it for me.
That's great. And so I'll just give out a couple little social plugs for the show itself, just in case you didn't know. We're on Facebook. We have our page there, facebook.com/almostfamousminute. And our group there is the Band-Aids Listener Society. Just need to, you know, ask to join and answer a couple quick, easy questions about the movie. That and even if you put in something really goofy, I'll still add you in. We'll know you're not a bot that way. And then there's Twitter for this show is at Almost Famous Min, and the same for Instagram too. So you can follow in all those different places or whichever ones you prefer. Hope to see you around. Like I said, it sounds like we'll have both you guys, Chad and Tyler, back for a minute 54 next time. This was 53. And until then, it's all happening.
It's all happening.
I am a golden god! Yeah! Yes, you
are! And I was born in the backseat of a Greyhound bus, rolling down Highway 41.
You know the Queen of Hearts is always your best bet.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.